Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 43. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero. John is sick, and so joining us as co-host today is Mr. Duncan Epping. Duncan, how you doing, sir?
Hey, Pete. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Unfortunately, John is not doing so well. He's sick today. And so on that note, thank you for stepping in and co-hosting with me here on the Virtually Speaking Podcast, especially since I think you're on vacation this week, right? You're just wrapping up your vacation, aren't you?
Yeah, I just got back on Wednesday. We were in Malta for 10 days on a vacation and just got back. So trying to get back into it, cleaning up my email and some other mess.
Nice.
And then getting back at work again on Monday.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, welcome back, my friend. Me, I'm going back to Vegas. Yay. For Dell EMC World, though. So that's going to be cool. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of being in Vegas, but I do love the trade shows. And so John and I are going to head out to Vegas. We're going to do some booth babe work, but we're also going to be doing some podcast work. So anybody who's going to Dell EMC World, be sure to reach out to us on Twitter. We'd love to catch up with you on the podcast and hear what you're doing over there at Dell EMC World.
If you guys are doing booth babe work, then I probably know what John is doing. He's probably getting his hair fixed because it looked like a mess last time I saw him. So it must be that.
Yeah. He's getting all dialed up.
Not surprised.
Well, Duncan, thanks for joining. I think this is going to be a great one. This is a young man who I spoke to at VMworld last year when he first came back to VMware. And he's been doing some really great things in the cloud space. Well, let me have him explain what he's doing. Welcome to the podcast, Mr. Frank Dennerman.
Thank you. And first of all, I would like to say I love your intro, man. It's so awesome. And
oh, yeah?
Got me hyped up. Yeah, I think this is one of the best intros of any podcast out there.
Oh, it's thanks, awesome, man. So you're. I know that you left VMworld a while, then you came back, and you've been focusing on some cloud area, and it's been sort of not a secret, but it's just been people have been waiting because it's still sort of in that early phases. Why don't you tell us what you're working on at VMware?
Yeah, so I'm working on the VMware Cloud on AWS stuff. I am a part of VMware R&D, especially in the technical marketing team, and I focus on the strategy of technical marketing of the VMware Cloud on AWS service.
Nice. Well, we're going to dive into that in a minute. But before we do, I heard a little rumor about you. I need you to confirm if it's true or not.
Okay.
A little birdie told me that you fancy yourself to be a bit of an aficionado on old school hip hop. Is that true?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
All right.
I think
so. I'm going to put you on the spot. I got a little quiz for you.
Oh, man. Don't do this to me. Okay.
You ready? I'm going to give you a couple of sound clips. I want to see if you can tell me who this is. Ready?
Okay, I will bomb. Okay, but okay. Go ahead.
Well, if you get it right, you'll hear this.
I am profoundly dumbfounded.
And if you get it wrong, you're going to hear this.
Shame. You're Bush League.
You ready? Here
yeah.
We go. Number one.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Who is it?
NWA.
Oh, look at you. Well done. Okay.
I am You're profoundly one for one. Dumbfounded.
All right, here we go. The beat was supposed to drop right there. The beat was supposed to drop right there. The beat was supposed to. Anybody?
Oh, we tried.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You got it wrong. You want to guess again? Let me play it one more time for you because I know you know this guy. The beat was supposed to drop right there. The beat was supposed to drop right. Anything?
I think there was one, but
you
I'm
got
not sure.
It. All right. Yeah. Well, you got it right the second time, so I'm not going to give you 100% on that one, but that's good. All right. One more. Last one for you. Ready?
Okay. Check it out. Hit you with no delaying. So what you saying, yo?
Silly with my 9 milli with the dilly, yo. When I well,
Buster.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. While up in the club, like we while in the studio.
You profoundly dumbfounded.
You have passed the test. We can move on. So let's get started. I know you have been working for a while on this, but why don't you tell us, give us the high level, what exactly is VMware Cloud on AWS?
Okay, so VMware Cloud on AWS is basically matching the best enterprise software, vSphere, with the best data center operating in the world, AWS. So what we do is we're going to deploy a full SDDC environment on a bare metal service within an AWS infrastructure anywhere around the world where AWS has their data centers. So you get a, this is going to be weird, a private cloud from a public cloud provider.
Okay.
Yeah. So we will spin up four ESX hosts. We're going to use NSX for networking, and we're going to use vSAN for the storage platform.
Okay.
You connect to your vCenter, which we run in that cluster. And from that point on, you have a vSphere 6.5. We started with vSphere 6.5 cluster at your disposal, and you can run the workloads you want to run. You can connect them to your on-premises data center. You can use link mode, and you can span the networks. So you can start a vMotion from your on-premises data center to your in-cloud data center and vice versa, right? So you can expand your data center, or you can run it in a bubble where you can just basically say, I don't want to run and operate my own data centers anymore. So basically a data center zero model, where you go from a CapEx model to an OpEx model. So instead of buying and operating your hardware yourself, you're going to use the hardware and basically rent hardware and software from a company. That's possible with VMware Cloud and AWS. This is the good stuff. You still use vSphere. So your operating team can still apply their normal operational procedures like they always have done.
Okay. Okay. So essentially this is, because I'm sure a lot of folks out there are very familiar with using AWS natively and just spinning up new workstations for whether it's production or even for test and dev. The real value that we're bringing here, because and we don't have to manage these hosts ourselves, right? So we spin these up as sort of a service, but then the real value here is that we still get to do vMotion from our private cloud. So we've got a hybrid cloud model, and we get to still leverage our administrators that know VMware. So we still get to use all the same tools, but essentially we're doing this in a cloud model. Is that the gist of it?
Yeah, perfect. You got it. And I think that's one of the key parts, because when you, what we did as VMware, we started talking to a lot of customers and we started to ask, okay, so you fancy a cloud model, that this can be a cloud only, or this could be a hybrid cloud. And most of our customers says, yeah, we want to use a hybrid cloud solution. And there are some research done on this topic as well. So why do you want to do this? Why do you want to go to cloud? And the main reason is agility. That is the primary reason to move to a cloud. So obviously the next question we ask is, why can you not obtain this agility within your own infrastructure, right? And that's the answer is infrastructure. It's legacy infrastructure in particular, from an operational standpoint and from a technology standpoint. It's a lot of problems where customers need to rip out their data centers every 3 to 4 years, or parts of their data centers. And some customers say, I don't want to do this anymore. I like your technology, but this doesn't add up for us anymore. And with this model, what we're trying to build, you can do this. You can have your own data center, and you can have an in-cloud data center using the same platform, using the same models, using the same, you can use the same, like we already discussed, right? You can use the same skill set to deploy your virtual machines, either on-prem or in cloud. You can use the same monitoring tools and automation tools. It's just all the same. I think that's one of the brilliant things we bring to the table with this service. Well, it's one of those things, right?
Yeah.
There are plenty more.
So from an operational perspective, Frank, I understand all of those benefits, but, things like upgrades, stuff like that, how does that work in AWS? Because I can imagine it's rather complex because you don't own the physical aspect. Who owns that? And, what are the concerns or benefits for customers?
Yeah. So the whole offering is a service, meaning that we take full responsibility for your hardware and for the software that it runs. And what I mean software, I mean the vSphere layer and the management bits, such as at the NSX VMs and vCenter. That means that we will upgrade and we will patch your service. There is, of course, it's a partnership between AWS and VMware, meaning that if hardware fails, it's AWS responsibility. But you have a contract with VMware as a customer. So if something is wrong And we haven't detected it yet because we will monitor and we will operate your system. But for the example, if you see something what's wrong, you call VMware and we will take care of this. If there's a hardware problem, we will interface with AWS and we will make sure it's right. Now, some of this stuff is actually automatic, right? Because that's one of the beauties of working with AWS, the elasticity of the framework that AWS brings to the table with its EC2 environment. So you can, with an API call, you can actually spin up a new physical host. Now, we integrated that possibility with DRS and with HA. So if an HA event occurs and a host fails, we automatically spin up a new host and add it to the cluster. So you maintain the number of resources you're actually paying for. So when you start off with four hosts and one host fails, you automatically get a new host added to the cluster without you having to do anything. And so your VMs can run, can power up on the new additional host and consume the resources. So you don't have any resource starvation.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Let me ask another question on that, because I think that's rather interesting. I've never seen that anywhere. From a storage perspective, from a vSAN perspective, does that mean that the old host is taken out of the cluster immediately? And if so, what happens to the data? Because at that point, there's only a single instance of the data.
Yeah. Well, it depends on the severity of the outage. If the host just fails because of, for example, a purple screen of death, and it just re-enters, it will be added to the, it will stay in the cluster, and we will drain out the data to the new hosts. That is one of the operational models we're working on. If the host fails in a rather severe way, it's similar to as a normal failure in your own data center, right? The host is gone. Your data from that device is gone. How does vSAN operate? Well, we do exactly the same. Now, the difference is we have that new host instantly added to your cluster. So there's much more parallelism to use. There's more devices to redistribute the data to get it back to the original
state.
Yeah, to the original state. Let me put it that way. Yeah.
That's rather interesting. So I can imagine that, as you said, depending on the failure scenario, you'll add additional hosts. Can there also be scenarios, as you mentioned, if it's a purple screen of that you don't add the additional host, but someone from an AWS perspective reboots the system, or it's automatically rebooted because a certain failure scenario has been detected, or how does that work?
Yeah, so that's one of the things what we're researching right now, because the service hasn't been operational yet, and we are working with AWS to go through all these outage scenarios. And so sometimes it makes sense to actually wait instead of just going mental and trying to do as much as trying to pull every plug possible. Yeah. So that's something what we're testing on right now. So we're in the later phases of the whole development, meaning that we've got the infrastructure from AWS. We run our software on top of the infrastructure, because although we're using very mature software, vSphere 6.5, NSX, and vSAN, we have built new software to actually manage all this, right? And that's something we are testing right now. So the operational bits in the critical path are mature, but the way we try to manage this and the way we try to conduct this as a service, that's new software. So that's something we are testing on at this moment.
Sure.
But from an operational perspective, that's also a challenge, because we need to figure out what makes sense from our operational perspective and our maintenance perspective. How can we adjust some of the stuff? Because think about patching as well. Because a customer, we patch the hardware, but the moment we patch, we need to talk to the customer. Now, we're not going to talk to every customer individual and ask, can we patch now? So one of the things we're thinking about is how to create a policy where the customer can identify, like, I'm a little bit in a frozen period. I've got my quarter endings, or I got a particular moment. I don't want to have you touch my system. So that's something we are researching as well.
Okay. Well, one of the things I always seem to wonder about is this whole egress, ingress. Is this going to be something, what use case works in this? Is there a cost consideration I need to think about having a certain workload sitting on the cloud is it going to cost money? Is this Hotel California? It's going to, you get it up there pretty cheaply, but to get it back down, it's going to be almost not cost effective.
Well, you can check out, of course, and the beauty of this is vMotion. The moment you have virtual machines running in the cloud, you can also vMotion it back on prem. But I don't think that's going to happen really fast. One of the coolest use cases, of course, is when you already have some services in AWS running. Well, customers have services such as S3 and maybe an relational database service. Now, for those customers, especially with S3, they store a lot of data. Well, let's take the example of IoT. There's people or customers are interested in IoT, and they yeah. fetch the data and they store it in an S3 bucket. Easy, clean, nice to do. And the thing is, most of the applications that actually consume that data or use that data, they can run on-prem. Now, from that perspective, the data you have to get out of your S3 bucket, that is a costly adventure. You can find the cost of egress data on the AWS website. Actually, it's one of the interesting things to do on a regular basis, because Amazon changes the cost on a regular basis. Now, the thing is, what you can do is you can say, look, from a data gravity perspective, my application is removed from the data itself that lives inside the S3 bucket. With this scenario, you can vMotion your application from on-prem to in cloud. So it sits in the region or in the availability zone, typically a region of the AWS infrastructure.
Okay.
And that results in a lower data movement cost, because it's not egressing out of an AWS infrastructure anymore.
Yeah.
It's moved within, and that's a different cost model. Now, with that, and because data gravity occurs and you got it closer, you can start to think about, okay, so how do I need to use it? Because one of the things people immediately say is like, okay, hold on, I got this application running inside my vSAN data store. And now you basically say, I'm going to get that data out of S3 and put it in my vSAN. Well, that's a different cost model. Well, not entirely, because typically it's a short-lived data instance. You just consume it, you process it, and new data occurs, and you can change and you can use that data as well. You discard the old data, right? So there is not, that cost is not that expensive or as tremendous as people think it is, because the whole data process model is different.
Yeah, because it's already there.
Yeah, and it's short-lived. So it doesn't consume your vSAN data store for a longer period of time.
Yeah.
Those data services that you're now talking about, things like S3, they are directly available in the VMware Cloud on AWS environment, or is that something that, you know, is connected in a different way? How does that work? Can you talk about that?
A little bit. So we're working on getting some support or getting integration with the native APIs from Amazon within the vSphere layer. That's something we're not going to push within the first release, but because this is a service, we iterate on a faster pace. So eventually it will be exposed. One of the things is we're trying to figure out which service is the most popular and how our internal products can consume those services in the best way possible.
So when you talk about those services, that to me, that also means that people now on premises can use the AWS services in a similar fashion as they would with VMware on AWS. Is my understanding correct?
I'm not sure if that's going to be available in the near future, but I assume, because we already are researching this and we are getting this knowledge inside the company of VMware, we sure can figure out how to expose that to our on-premise customers as well. But this is future talk, so I cannot make any commitments on that.
Yep. Yeah, I understand. We know how it works. I'm more than happy to talk about that, by the way. I always get myself into trouble. It's funny, because I've been talking to a lot of customers about VMware on AWS, or at least a lot of customers are asking me questions about it. Not that I know a lot about it, but you know, a lot of customers seem to be interested, and this use case always comes up. People are already using AWS in a particular way. They have something like vRealize automation, and now they have a new project coming up and they want to utilize the cloud environment for that. And having all of those additional services available at the same time, just sounds like a great opportunity to expand the data center in an extremely fast and agile way. So, you know, I'm really excited. I'm on board.
Cool.
Yeah, should be good. So I know you're not here to talk dates and prices and all that. That's really not the goal of this podcast. I really was more curious about the technology and some of the more common use cases. Suffice it to say, on the public, on VMware.com, you know, if you look and see when the service will be available, I guess the target is mid-2017 timeframe. So I guess we'll be expecting some really cool announcements at VMworld. That's just my guess.
I think so as well. I think VMworld US will be buzzing with new news and with customer statements and all that stuff. So yeah. Look forward to this. Is a perfect reason to go to 2017 to the US version.
Yeah,
it should be some way you can talk to your boss about this as a customer, saying, "Look, I really need to be at this this show, because there's a lot of engineers at the show. There's a lot of people who are working on it at the show, and this is the future of VMware. This is one of the strategic elements with the company itself." So. Yeah, it makes sense to get the news.
Yeah, if you're like me and you hate going to Vegas, or if you go way too many times every year, then this is more than enough of a compelling reason to come to VMworld this year.
Yeah,
during your introduction, you briefly mentioned networking, and I think that's probably something that most of us would skip normally. You know, considering we're from the always look at things from a storage perspective or a compute perspective. You mentioned that NSX is part of the solution. Does that also mean that on-premises there's a requirement for NSX, or can you use different types of solutions? And what are customers looking to use from that perspective?
Good question.
Yeah. So, excellent question. The thing is that we have some requirements and we have some recommendations. So the requirement on-prem is a 6.5 environment. That's the only requirement we would like to have. Now, for the rest, it's just recommendations, right? So do you need to run NSX in your on-prem environment? No, you don't. Do we recommend it? Yes, we do. Because now you can start to use all those excellent services and features that NSX provides. And because you can span it, you can now start to do policy-driven and push policies across two different data centers, your on-prem and your in-cloud environment. But it's not required. So you can connect with an L2 VPN to your in-cloud data center. That's possible as well.
So NSX is not required on the other side, but highly recommended. That makes sense to me.
Yep.
One other question I had, you mentioned the IoT use case. You know, I'm assuming you've been talking to many customers over the past, potential customers, I should probably say, over the past 6 to 12 months. You know, what kind of other use cases are coming up? What are customers looking to use it for?
In general, we've got three use cases that people want to do. We already talked about moving away from an on-prem, but also extending your data center into an in-cloud environment. You can also think about disaster recovery. Now, from a service perspective, it's like, okay, which applications do I really need to run now? Because Amazon has this amazing catalog of services, and a relational database service, you can start to think about, do I need to run this VM in my data center, or can I consume a service inside AWS. So if you have licensing problems, you can move that VM to an AWS environment and connect it to such a service, right? And just move away from that particular license model. That's one of the other things that a lot of customers are looking forward to explore.
That makes sense. Makes a lot of sense to me.
Another one I thought of possibly might be disaster recovery. Maybe if you're using SRM, maybe you could set up a failover to AWS cloud, and then you could spin up. Can you add compute on demand? Like, let's just say you had a small environment that couldn't completely cover all of your DR needs. Could you quickly spin up more compute to support, say, a larger failover? Is that something that's possible?
Yeah, you can just resize your cluster. So right-click your cluster inside the vCenter UI. There's a new button called Resize Cluster. And you can say, you will get the question, how many hosts do you want? And you can add the host. Now, DRS actually can do this automatically as well. So you set a threshold on when to expand your cluster, and you set a limit on how many hosts you want to spin up So it will automatically add more hosts as long the moment you start to pour on more workloads.
Ah, okay.
And it will gradually and granularly add more hosts. So it doesn't say, so if you start off with four and you say my threshold, my limit is 8 hosts, it doesn't add 4 hosts. It just starts to add 2 up to the limit of 8.
Got it.
Right? So it's a perfect way of doing disaster recovery. You have a lower amount of hosts, a smaller number of hosts inside the AWS infrastructure, and then add host if you have a failure.
Cloud bursting on demand. I like it.
Yes. Yeah.
And that means it also allows you to shrink it?
Yes. Yes. Cool. But with everything, in normal compute architecture, adding is faster than shrinking. That's a general rule. So it depends on the amount of workload that you're running and the amount of data footprint you have, because we need to extract that data from your vSAN data store and we redistribute it of the available nodes, right? So there are some, I don't want to call it drawbacks, but yeah, you have to consider the general rule: shrinking is slower than adding.
I would prefer a faster add than a faster shrink.
Well, yeah.
All right, so that makes sense to me. We'll learn more, I'm sure, at VMworld. So this is a pretty good introduction to what VMware is doing, looking at with AWS. A bigger question for me, though, is why do you think that VMware took this approach? You know, I know we've been focusing heavily on software-defined storage, on, you know, working on, you know, private cloud, and then you know, some hybrid. Why do you think this move to AWS? It's like, from a business perspective, why did VMware go this way?
So last year at the keynote of VMworld, Pat was on stage and he mentioned some Gartner reports. And one of the things he said was that around 2030, 50% of all the workloads run in cloud. 50% of the market at that time. Now that's a gigantic market.
Yeah.
And you want to pursue that market.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know, Duncan, you've got a slide deck I've seen that has like a projection of where storage consumption is going, right? The one where it has like the, you know, the trends going towards cloud, trends going towards hyper-converged infrastructure, and then how sort of traditional storage is shrinking ever so rapidly.
Yeah, that one is interesting because it's not like traditional storage is shrinking, but it's not growing as fast as it used to.
Yeah.
The key reason for it being, and you know, that's more or less what we've been talking about for the last, you know, 40 minutes, is that the world from an infrastructure perspective is changing. So people are starting to use, you know, S3 buckets come up regularly, whether that's for backup purposes or applications directly writing to it. You know, the world is changing fast, and I think there's a lot more that's going to be changing in the upcoming years, which is interesting for us as a technologist, but also just, you know, administrators and architects. Because there's a lot more things that we need to take into consideration into the future. It's not going to be as easy as it used to be.
That makes sense. Well, hey, these people need to earn their money, right?
Correct.
Awesome. All right. Well, I think those are all the questions I had concerning VMware Cloud on AWS. Duncan, did you have anything else for Frank before we take off?
Well, now that we have him on the podcast anyway, we may as well give him the opportunity to talk about a project that he's been working on for probably a year now.
Oh, my goodness.
I know he's writing a new book. So, you know, the host resource deep dive, maybe he can... Give us a couple of scoops, hints, tell us what's coming up. When can we expect it? I think half of the people following him on Twitter have been pestering him for a release date. So what's up, Frank?
Yeah, now he's teasing us with pictures on Twitter of the actual book cover. I'm tell us about this, Frank.
So yeah, I think you're close with a year now. I think I'm writing every night for at least 2 to 3 hours since last, after VMworld US, I think. Wow. I started. Yeah. So it takes a lot of time, and Duncan noticed, because we've written 3 books together. It's an insane project, and nearing the end, you always wonder why are you doing this to yourself? Well, I'm at that stage at this moment. But the thing is, every time when you receive a new proof copy, which I received this weekend, what was on Twitter, of course, it's amazing. It's an amazing feeling to see a book taking shape and getting near the completion. So the last thing what we are writing now is actually storage. We save the best for last. Nice. Now, what we do with this book, and I mean, when I say we, I mean Niels and I. So the history of the book, let me talk about the book first. So the book is called vSphere 6.5 Host Resources Deep Dive. And it's some of it's a buddy, it's a companion to the clustering deep dive. But now it focuses on host resources. It focuses on CPU, memory, storage, and networking. So with storage, I mean the local devices. And this is particularly interesting for people who want to use vSAN, right? And what type of technology do you want to use? What is different between those types of technology? We talk about flash, we talk about 3D crosspoint. Okay, so if you want to use flash, you have different protocols and you have different interfaces. What are the differences between SATA, SAS, and NVMe, right? All that stuff, that's the stuff that we explain. We explain it from a hardware component perspective, but also from a VM kernel perspective. Now, we're not going into much detail about how vSAN works because Duncan wrote an excellent book with Cormac. Yes. On vSAN, right? So I'm not going to copy that by that one because I cannot rival that one.
Yeah.
But what we can do, we can explain like these technologies interact in the best way possible with vSAN, right? We don't exclude centralized storage, but different. But that's more from a VM kernel perspective. Think about QDEPs. Think about how to manage that all. Now, the reason why we started this was actually because of an NFV project that Niels was on with a large European telecom provider. And the cool thing is, and if you look at the way our community is moving, besides the cloud stuff, we are moving towards an end goal of creating platforms. With vSAN, we create a modern storage platform. With NSX, we create a modern network platform. And sometimes we forget that the fundamentals of actually creating a successful platform is getting your host configuration correct.
Right.
It's all about a chain, right? The definition of a chain is that the output of the previous process is the input of the next process. Now, think about this from a virtual machine configuration perspective. You have a particular number of CPUs. Now, that configuration is input for the NUMA scheduler. And it's going to take a look at, okay, can I fit this in one physical CPU package with the X amount of cores, or do I need to span it across multiple? If you need to span it across multiple, those affinity groups, as we call them, they are the input of the CPU scheduler because that limits the load balancing capabilities of the CPU scheduler of the host itself.
Sure.
Now, that means that changes how memory is consumed and how much memory you have in your physical host. And that means that it will have impact, or your actual physical configuration of your host impacts the ability to operate your VMs in a consistent way. And I think that's the key part of the book. What we try to achieve is not try to crank out the last megahertz and the last bit of your system, but we try to achieve a environment or a mindset for people to create systems that provide services to your platform in a consistent manner. So you always know what type of performance you get from your vSAN or from your NSX. And that's what we have been working on for the last year.
Well, yeah. And you and I talked about this offline, but yeah, we're definitely going to have you come in for a deep dive on this. Once the book is out, yeah, I'd love for you to walk us through, and maybe we can ring Niels on as well, because I know he's a big contributor to this. So I think that would make for an awesome podcast.
Awesome. Just let me know.
Very cool. Duncan, thank you for reminding me that. I had it on my notes. I don't know how I didn't ask him.
No problem.
I'm guessing you're not coming to Dell EMC World as well, all the way in the US this time?
Nope. Unfortunately, because I think I've never been to Dell EMC World, and I've seen, you know, all the people talking about it on Twitter. It seemed like a great event.
It is.
I had an invite. I had an invite to speak, but I had two other things going on roughly at the same time. Need to be in the U.S. again at the end of the month for our internal R&D conference, which is also going to be a lot of fun and very interesting. So it is what it is. But yeah. I have to make choices.
Sounds good, my friend. All right. Well, appreciate you picking up the slack for Mr. John Nicholson, who is MIA. And Frank, we really want to thank you for coming on the podcast. And I'm looking forward to having you come back on to do the host deep dive in a few weeks.
It's always a pleasure.
All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to us on SoundCloud or iTunes by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. Next week, we're packing it all up and heading down to Dell EMC World. And so if you're not going to be there, until next time, bye for now.
I am profoundly dumbfounded.
John, he's not here, but he's profoundly dumbfounded.
Pete is right.
I can't believe you didn't get KRS-One right, Frank. Of all rappers, come on.
Sorry.
Enough of this jibber jabber.